This episode brought to you by Own the Gray podcast. Discover how others age with attitude at ownthegray.ca.
Welcome to another episode of Lunch with a Healer. I'm your host, Dr. Susan Hoffman. My guest today, Kevin Roth, is an internationally known singer, writer, and dulcimer player who's recorded over 50 recordings, won numerous awards, sang the theme to the hit PBS TV show Shining Time Station, and has been recognized by major companies such as Time Warner, Parents Magazine, Sony Music, among others, for his unique talent. In 2016, he was diagnosed with stage 3 melanoma, given only 2 to 3 years to live. Kevin had a choice, either get busy living or get busy dying. He beat the odds, changed his diet, outlook, and went from surviving to thriving, moving from Kansas to beautiful San Diego, California, where he created a life worth living on his terms. At the suggestion of a colleague, he decided to teach others what he did to change his life and continues to do daily to create a healthy, balanced, happy, and successful life. Since 2016, he's been cancer-free and is now highly regarded by doctors, clergy, and professionals for his unique life coaching skills, as well as creating a unique form of meditation called Dulcie Meditation. Kevin has dedicated his life to music and life coaching, teaching powerful spiritual and scientific-based evidence techniques that helps one let go of stress and live an authentic and happy life. Kevin and I had a great conversation, and he even treated me to a taste of his dulcimer music, which was beautiful. And here is my conversation with Kevin Roth. Enjoy.
The best conversations happen when we're having lunch with our friends, especially when one is a healer. Pull up a chair and join us to expand your knowledge and open your mind.
Welcome to the show, Kevin.
Thank you. Nice to be here.
My pleasure. You're a professional musician, known worldwide as a leading innovative dulcimerist, achieved fame and success, and you're diagnosed in 2016 with stage 3 melanoma, an aggressive form of cancer, as I know it. And I believe this is the beginning of profound changes in your life. So this is where I would like our discussion to begin.
Question, no one's ever asked me that, but it is true. I was born a spiritual and musical.
Okay.
And I was born with a sense, when I got old enough to have a little bit of it, that I was connected, that we all are connected to Source, God, the Absolute, whatever you want to call it, and that I was aware that this world was pretty much not real when I was very, very young, because it didn't make any sense to me, even at around the age of 4 or 5.
You were given the diagnosis, but yeah. What motivated you to look inward to heal rather than look externally with conventional methods? Because I'm sure at stage 3 that they were recommending some conventional treatments.
Well, actually, I didn't ever expect to even get cancer because I was a healthy guy, and they discovered it on a routine dermatology appointment. So it's a long story that I cover pretty much in my book, but the synopsis of it is that, you know, when you're given a death sentence, there's nothing like a death sentence to wake you up.
Yeah.
And what I was told is that there was they removed a cancerous lymph node and a little spot on my nose. But at stage 3, this thing had metastasized. There is no cure for melanoma as we're speaking today. I think there will be, but there isn't currently, and there certainly wasn't back then. So they said that there was a 70% chance it would return within a year, and then I would probably die within a couple years. But I didn't trust any of the oncologists that I looked for. I was living at the time in Kansas, Missouri. I was working on a new record with Noel Paul Stuckey of Peter, Paul, and Mary. He was producing it. It's called Reawakening. In fact, I just saw him for lunch just last week. It'd been a couple of years, and we were talking about that project and this whole cancer episode.
Right.
But there was one guy I saw on the internet, a picture of his face, and his name was Dr. Gower, and I wanted to get in to see him, but he wasn't taking new patients. And because I had to have my whole body scanned to see where else this possibly had spread, I ended up with this female oncologist who arranged for the CAT scan and the MRI and all that stuff. And when I went in to get the test results, she said that the cancer had not spread anywhere, but that I should have a lymphectomy, which is a removal of the lymph nodes. And I, not being a doctor, knowing squat about any of that stuff, I said, well, if there isn't cancer, why would you take out lymph nodes? And she said, it's protocol. And I said, my name is not protocol. I said, if you can show me cancer, we'll talk about it. She said, well, it's in your system microscopically. And I said, well, then you might as well take every damn thing out. And I got angry and I left. And on my way out, I saw a card at the receptionist desk of the doctor I wanted. He worked there, and I demanded to see him. And I was given an appointment that the next morning. It was just a gut feeling I had. I've always been very intuitive. And he was the only oncologist out of the five that I interviewed that said, I don't think you should do anything. I think you should just wait. Because you're a young guy, you're a singer, there's a chance it's going to come back, 70% chance, and then we'll just treat it symptomatically. So it was a very long year.
I bet.
You know, it's not like you go for a blood test and in 4 or 5 days you call the doctor and get the results. So I ended up having to do, well, not having, I chose to do a very deep spiritual nosedive. Do you want me to tell you a little bit about that?
Well, yeah, absolutely. I want you to, but I'm just curious. You know, you were spiritual to begin with, mm-hmm. so you understood about the mind-body relationship, I'm assuming. Had you read Louise Hay or Heal Your Mind, Heal Your Body, anything like that?
No, you know, I'm one of these spiritual guys that don't like a lot of woo-woo stuff.
Okay.
I, as a personal coach, because that's what I do now for people, I call it life by design. I only teach what I experience. So I knew that I had created a successful music career by doing a certain thing. And I knew that I could probably cure my, well, I didn't know if I could cure my cancer, but I knew that I wasn't going to die. So how did I know this? I knew this because I am very aware that we all create a story about our lives, who we are. And if we really believe it, we walk into it and we become it. Now, this is not dissimilar from what Louise or Deepak Chopra or Wayne Dyer, who's one of my favorite authors, talks about. But I had experienced this. And I was not a meditator. I don't personally like any kind of meditation that most people do. That's why I discovered and created something called Dulce Meditation, which I'll talk to you about later.
Yes.
But I said, you know what? I'm changing the story. I'm getting the hell out of Kansas. I'm going to California, going to San Diego, and I'm going to live my life as a bohemian. And I'm going to find an apartment for $1,000, and I'm going to do my life, which was an impossibility financially at that time. I mean, you couldn't find an apartment for $1,000, let alone a room.
Right.
And I just said, this is who I'm going to be. This is who I am right now. And I'm walking into it. And I found an apartment within 2 weeks, and I moved out in 4, and my whole life changed. You know, there's two songs I wrote on my last album about all of this. One is called Dorothy, comparing myself to journeying down the yellow brick road.
Right, of course.
And learning the wisdom. And then the other song is The Incredible Lightness of Being, which was about my drive from Kansas to California and how I ended one dream and began another. That's on an album called The Deviant Dulcimerist. It's on iTunes or Amazon or something like that. But that's what I did. I had created my career. I got my first record contract at 15. So I knew shortly around the area of Peter, Paul, and Mary time that I was wanted to be well known and get a record deal and a TV show and be rich and famous and all that stuff, which I kind of accomplished. You know, so I had a lot of zeros in my checking account at 32, but a big zero in my heart. I wasn't happy right. with all of that.
Were you under a lot of stress when the cancer diagnosis came?
Oh, yeah. It was a lot of fear.
That was my next question.
And who I found that helped me was a woman named Prudence Sinclair, who survived stage 4 melanoma, who was told she would be dead within 4 months. And she went out and she meditated and changed her diet and changed her life. Thank God I found her. Because when you Google surviving melanoma, you get all kinds of horror stories. And there's all kinds of ways you can do it. You can do it Western, Eastern. You can go to Mexico and have coffee enema. I mean, there's all kinds of things. And nobody that I talked to made me feel secure. I got all kinds of answers from, coffee enemas to you need to find Jesus right. to all kinds of things. But Prudence had lived it, and she had survived it past 20 years at that point. So I asked her if she would work with me and work with my belief. I also had done a lot of my type of praying, which is not traditional praying, but it was a very transformative year, as you can imagine.
It must have been unbelievable. Very, very difficult and courageous thing that you did, because it meant really looking inside, rediscovering who Kevin was, I imagine. Well, what changes did you make? I mean, what changes in your diet did you make? I'm curious.
Well, the first thing I did is I dropped stress. At that time, I was under a lot of debt for various business reasons. And I called the credit card companies and told them, look, this is what I can afford, take it or leave it. And they said, well, your credit's going to be ruined. I said, well, chances are I'll be dead within 2 years. So do you want it or do you not want it? I got away from negative people and I started to eat an anti-inflammatory, anti-cancer diet, which basically consists of no sugar, fresh, organic fruits and vegetables, maybe some lean meats. I lost a lot of weight because one of the causes of cancer is inflammation and stress. And I was at the time 30 pounds overweight. Mostly I was stressed. All of this was brought on by stress.
Okay.
The year before the cancer came, well, not even quite a year, my 9-year relationship ended. My father, who I was very close to, died, and my business almost went bankrupt. Yeah. And my music career had stalled because people weren't booking concerts for various reasons, and people were taking my music, downloading it for free, which is what people do, no longer selling CDs. So right. I dropped, as all musicians did, in revenue. So that was stress. All that was stressful.
Wow. All right. So what inner work did you do and what modalities did you use?
So when I was in Kansas, I was in my apartment watching Netflix and I stumbled upon a documentary about a guy named Yogananda, and it was called Awake. And I watched it, and he taught self-realization, and I was mildly interested in it. But something said, look for one of his churches. And I thought, well, there's not going to be one in Kansas. I know there's one in California and New York, but certainly not in Kansas.
Yeah.
And I Googled, because my gut said, just Google and look. And literally, I could walk out my apartment and within 10 minutes be at a church of his, the only one in Kansas. There was no signs that said anything. Wow. And it was through going to his church and learning a little bit about self-realization that I discovered an author named Robert Wolf and a book that he had written about a guy named Ramana Maharshi, mm-hmm. who I just connected with immediately. And began to ask myself, who was I and what was going on and what did I need to do? That's really what happened. And that continues to today. I read a lot of Ramana Maharshi. The book that I'm writing actually speaks about him a lot, but it also talks about Jesus Christ, you know, because what Jesus said and Buddha and Ramana and all these other guys, they all basically say the same thing. When I started to write the book, it wasn't just about my experience, but to introduce to people, as I do in my YouTube videos, the fact that there is an inner place that you can go to that is yours, and there is peace there, you know. What's interesting about this whole process is that you can say spiritually, according to the old spiritual texts like the Upanishads, that all this is a dream and all it's an illusion. But science, quantum physics, now says the same thing.
Exactly.
They say that everything is empty. So when you put the two together, you begin to ask yourself, well, if it's all a dream, then what is this experience? And who am I? And what's really going on? And how do I get there? You know, what's the path up the mountaintop? So interestingly enough, about 3 weeks ago, one of my YouTube videos on an out-of-body experience that I talked about went viral. It went from 400 views to 63,000 as of today. And then I made a second one. I just came back from Big Sur and I made part two last week. And that's up to about 800 views. And what that told me was that many, 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 many people, because I received 300-400 comments and I get emails now, everyone is looking for the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
Goes back to what we originally started to talk about. It's that longing to go back home. So people who have near-death experiences say that when they died, they met what they call God and they felt home.
Right.
That's what I felt when I was 7 or 8, is like, well, this earth doesn't seem like home, and we're spinning at 1,000 miles an hour in the middle of nothing. What is going on? Certainly this can't be true. Why is the moon not falling into us? Well, why are the stars hanging up? These are just practical questions. Well, when you get into quantum physics, even if you don't read a lot of Deepak Chopra or Louise Hayes or anything like that, you can't deny the questions. If you want to know the answers. The problem is that we get caught up in things like making money, being successful, having love, and those replace temporarily this feeling of wanting to be connected to home.
Right.
When I discovered that, all problems more or less dropped away. So now when people say, well, what are you looking for? I say nothing, because I have what I need. I'm very content. People thank me all over the place for making those videos because I talk about this. If you want to avoid things as much as you can, like cancer and the craziness of life, you have to find out what the reality is. So now I don't need a relationship. I don't need a lot of money. You know, it'd be nice to have, I guess, someone in my life that wasn't crazy, if I could find that. Money, it's nice to have some money, but I don't need to be a millionaire again.
Right.
I live a very simple life. It's an inward life.
Right.
And joy is not so much from getting standing ovations in concerts, but it's working one-to-one with clients and changing their lives, teaching them what I did through the cancer experience.
That's really interesting. So basically, it sounds like you were finding your 7-year-old Kevin again.
Yeah.
Who was lost through years of just living life. What was the most significant thing that you learned about yourself during your cancer journey to healing? I mean, was it for instance, some people will say, I've learned to love myself again, feel worthy. Even though you had success and fame, did you feel unworthy?
No, but I never took any time to appreciate, you know, my success. It was always like, okay, I got the record deal, I got the TV show, I got the money, now what? So what happened was I was walking through my apartment the day that I was told that I had stage 3 melanoma, and I said out loud to my dog, I guess, it's, don't worry, buddy, we'll get through this. And I realized that I was talking to myself and that there were two Kevins. So there's the crazy Kevin, and then there's the Kevin from heaven.
Right.
So I became my own best friend, and I began to explore, why do I need all these things? Why do you know what's the point of all of this? So that was one of the things that I discovered. After I discovered that I was my own best friend and I had more self-compassion, I re-remembered I can create these changes. But you see, it ties into something very unusual for me. When I was very young, I saw sort of visions of three different phases of my life as a kid. So the first phase was that I would have a difficult childhood, which I did. The second, I would have even a more difficult middlehood, but be very successful, which I did. And the third is that I would become spiritually aware and be some sort of a teacher, having no idea I would be a coach. None. It was the furthest thing from my mind. And now I'm into that phase.
Really?
So, yeah.
It's amazing that you remember that.
Well, you don't forget it. It's like people who've had near-death experiences, they'll tell you, well, it was like as if I had it yesterday.
Yeah.
Something like that.
How did you have an out-of-body experience?
There is an awareness that I've always had. I've always been kind of psychic and aware, but the experience of seeing the future or sensing something, I don't feel like I'm in my body or out of my body. There's no there. It's like asking, well, you know, where is God? You know, well, there is no up there in heaven.
Right.
There's no definitive thing. So the reason I call it an out-of-body experience is because I've never had a near-death experience, don't really care to have one. But right. The people who've had them say that they feel like they're just removed from this life and they're seeing it as if watching a movie.
Right.
And that's what I have that all the time.
Really?
Yeah. I can have it driving. It's not like I'm in my body, but I'm not. I just, there's no there with it.
And is it?
You know what it's like? It's very similar to writing songs. It's like flow.
Okay.
That's what it is.
Must be an amazing feeling.
Well, it's like channeling. It's just kind of, it's not so amazing to me because I've always done it. It's amazing that beautiful songs come to me. Sometimes lyrics flow and I have to literally look the words up because I'm not sure that they fit, and they always fit.
Really?
How does that happen? You know, it's the simplest thing. You know, I just got this new dulcimer. I'll show you in a minute. I've been playing dulcimer 50 years and I just came up with a new tuning 3-4 days ago.
People who have had near-death experiences say that they feel an unconditional love that is like no other, not for a child, for your pet. Mm-hmm. It's that type of feeling. Have you experienced that?
No, I haven't. Okay. Well, I have it with my dog. I mean, I just adore my dog.
Yeah.
I think that I'm not there yet. I mean, I don't say I love myself. I'm curious about myself. I don't see myself as myself. I'm a spiritual being having a human experience.
Right. Right.
This feeling of love only comes with a feeling of success in the sense of like when I help a client break through.
Right.
You know, like I had a client have a major breakthrough not long ago, and she was in tears of joy. That to me is what you're speaking about.
Okay. It sounds to me like you found a place of incredible inner peace and contentment, which, no?
Well, I think of it more as a curiosity.
Okay.
I don't want anything. You know, I've been on the road now for 2 weeks because I'm writing this book in different parts of California, and I thought, oh, you're going to come home with some t-shirts and some this. And I didn't buy a thing. Well, I bought a dulcimer because it was so beautiful. Right. I don't need anything.
Yeah, that's so interesting.
It really is. My work is, you know, when things like the YouTube videos go viral, there's something that I teach called mindful awareness, which is pay attention to why did that, of all your YouTube videos, go viral.
Yeah.
This spoke about what you and I are now talking about. Why? Well, there's a reason for that. You know, it was the same reason I asked myself 5 years after the cancer didn't come back at a stoplight. Wait a minute, how did you survive that? There was a 70% chance you were going to be dead. And what came to me is to teach what you know.
Exactly. This is the purpose. This is why this occurred clearly. So you didn't use any visualization techniques of Kevin healed or, you know, these are what a lot of people talk about when they are doing some self-healing?
No. To me, and this is just to me.
Right.
That's too boring. What I do, like if I want, I'll tell you a funny story. I'm in a cabin here. It's absolutely beautiful in a place called Idlewild. It's at the top of the mountains in California. Absolutely stunning.
Yeah.
The reason I came here is to go hiking. And I thought, I'd love to live here. And the lady who owns this place, who rents it, just happened to come by and we were talking. And she offered this to me as an apartment.
Wow. Well, that's, so, yeah.
That's how it manifests. Now, I don't think I'll take it because I don't like snow and it does snow up here. I like the warmer weather of San Diego. But that's how it happens. So the reason that the other way of sitting and meditating and asking for things, I don't do that. I skip that step.
Right.
I just see it as being done.
Right. And because you're connected. You clearly have established the connection. And it's, you have a desire and it's being released. You really don't care about the outcome, it sounds like. You're not attached to the outcome. It would be nice, are you?
Well, you have to be careful what you ask for because before I got the cancer, I really asked in my heart to be spiritually enlightened.
Oh, that's interesting.
So now when I say things like that, I tell, you know, they say God's the bus driver, just be the passenger. Well, I give them directions. I say, I want this, but I don't want any of the bullshit and the drama with this. I'm telling you, I've had enough. I get it. Just, you know, send me birds to talk to me.
That is really interesting. And that's very well said. So your coaching, you say, is based on science, spirituality, and psychology. Can you just elaborate on that a little bit?
Well, I put myself through a lot of psychotherapy in my 20s because I needed it.
Okay.
And if I wasn't a performer, I would be a psychotherapist.
Okay.
I love the analytical. And I've studied that all my life. If I wanted to, I would still go in psychotherapy, not because I need it, but because I just love the analytical. So in place of psychotherapy, it's spiritual work. It's almost really the same thing. So that's where the psychology thing comes from. And when I merged the spirituality from the teachings of the Upanishads and non-duality,
right.
And then I look at science, and science says basically the same thing. I go through a process every day of asking myself different things because I have doubts and I have fears and I'm human.
Right.
And if I go through a rough time, I tell my clients about it, which is a cardinal rule not to do as a coach.
Hmm.
But I teach my experience. So I would say to them, you know what, yada, yada, yada. And this is what I did. And this is how I got through it. I share that, which is what I think my clients love about me. So that's kind of how I work it.
Do you have techniques like EFT, tapping techniques that you have used or that you have your clients use? We're going to get to your Dulce meditation. I know that that's obviously one of them. But do you have any other modalities?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. What I do is I teach the techniques that I use.
Okay.
So I have a little tiny book. It's about the size of my wallet. And on the first page, I write who Kevin is, what my story is. So I'm a coach, I'm a musician, I'm an artist. And every day when I'm having coffee, I look at it or I do some sort of spiritual reading, which reminds me, reconnects me to who I am and who I want to be, which is what I am. And then I do certain things, and this is what I teach. All day long, I have mindful awareness. So if I see something like walking through the woods here, if a bird lands near me and it starts singing, I don't brush that off. I look at it and I'm thinking, why is the bird there? Why is it looking at me and why is it singing? What is it saying? So that's an exploratory thing. The other thing is that you need balance in life because, you know, in this dream experience, it's the mind. But there is nothing physical called the mind. You can't open up a brain and hold a mind. So there's mental, emotional, physical, and spiritual. So if I'm feeling off, mentally, I can go for a hike and that clears that nonsense. If I'm feeling emotional, which I don't usually get because I'm pretty level, I'll read something spiritually, which will balance. So everything is about balancing everything out. I don't have any desire to be really happy, and I have no desire at all to be really sad. I like the middle.
That sounds like a Buddhist type of...
Is it? Yeah, I don't know a lot. You know, it's funny you may say that because a lot of things that I discovered on my own, and I don't say this to, you know, sound bogus, I later discovered were things that other people had used for thousands of years.
Yeah. It makes sense because it's natural.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, it is. Yeah. I just found some Rumi poems. In fact, one of them mentions the dulcimer.
Really? Yeah. Well, let's get to the dulcimer. First, please explain. I'm sure a lot of people don't know exactly what a dulcimer is.
There's two dulcimers. There's a hammer dulcimer hit with little hammers. Wooden hammers. And then there's the mountain dulcimer, which is a plucked instrument. And the mountain dulcimer is an American folk instrument, and it's based on European zithers. It's like fretted zithers. In the 60s, some of the early folk singers like John Jacob Niles and Gene Ritchie brought the dulcimer sort of from the mountains into the Greenwich Village folk scene. Joni Mitchell started to play one. A friend of mine actually built her first one for her. Well, not for her, but sold it to her. And then she took it to Europe and wrote four songs on that album, Blue, which is
right. One of my favorites.
And then in the 70s, there was a whole boom of popularity. And I was in that club because when I first saw dulcimer, I didn't really know how to play it. So I developed my own style, which is what got me assigned to Folkway Records. And that was the first of a dozen records I made for him over a decade. So I became known as an innovative dulcimer player in the 70s, and then I fell into children's family music, which got me on PBS TV singing the theme to Shining Time Station. But the dulcimer to me has been sort of like a canvas to paint on. So in the last several years, I developed a dulcimer based on certain woods and a cosmic sound hole design called a wink cosmic dulcimer. Wink is like I'm going to take a 20-minute wink. And I have them built by the dulcimer shop in Mountain View, Arkansas. And I sell them and I teach people to play dulce meditation.
Oh.
So that's what happens. Yeah. Now, I don't have the wink with me because I have a different dulcimer with me on this trip.
Okay. Well, the sound to me, it's like a combination of a guitar and a harp. It's hard to explain it. It's actually just beautiful. So what is dulce meditation?
Well, dulce meditation is something I'd done my whole life but didn't know it until someone who had suggested I become a coach said, well, you should use the dulcimer when you do it. And I said, well, why? I'm teaching people what I did to get out of, you know, a bad life into a better life by envisioning and the steps that I use. And he said, yeah, but you play the dulcimer. And I said, yeah. And he said, well, it's like dulce meditation. And I went, you know, he's right. So what happens is when I play the dulcimer and I'm not particularly singing a song, but I'm just sort of noodling, I get lost. I kind of get into the state of flow. And so here's what happens psychologically. When you play the dulcimer or really any stringed instrument that's on your body, you can feel the connection of the vibration subtly. But the mind, you know, the monkey mind is constantly chattering and wailing and all this stuff.
Oh, yeah.
So like a baby in a crib where you do the wind-up toy and it goes around and the baby shuts up from its whatever it's going through, and it kind of, you know, it's this extreme thing goes to like, oh, quiet, and watches this thing. That's what you're doing to your mind. You're playing to soothe it. So while it's off listening to what you're doing, you can ask inside yourself, what do I need to know? What do I need to do? Or what messages are coming through? So you're listening to your inner voice. The inner voice is constantly going, which is, to me, the voice of consciousness. But the mind is always jabbering. So I have the dulcimer here. This is made by a friend of mine, Howard Rugg. It's made of spruce and walnut.
It's beautiful.
So, yeah, the story of this is a guy walked under the walnut tree for many, many years, and then they made this dulcimer out of the walnut tree. And Howard, who's a friend of mine, built this, is now 86. I just did an interview with him about his dulcimer playing. Not to knock my wink dulcimers out of the market, but so let me play it for you. I'm going to try, and I have a little decoy duck here to hold this thing down in place. We're going to hope for the best here. Hold on a second. Let's see if we can do this. That'll help. There you go. So this is the unusual tuning I have. So I'll play you a little of it.
Okay.
Now, dulcimer meditation is much, much simpler. It would sound like this. So if you don't know how to play an instrument, this is super easy to play. I actually can teach this in elementary schools.
Really?
Yep. So if anyone wants to learn it, just contact me and I can show you how to do it or sell you a dulcimer. Because each dulcimer comes with dulcimer meditation. But let me play you a little little tune. So you can see how dreamy it is.
Oh, you're not kidding. That is really beautiful. Just beautiful.
Yeah, so, it takes me out.
Oh, you're not kidding. So there's no, you're not doing a guided meditation. There's no, you're not just the dulcimer.
No, but I have created them for clients. So if a client is going through something, I sometimes will create an original guided where I speak.
Right. And are they, do you have them like 10 minutes, 15 minutes and beyond? How long are the meditations usually?
The guided ones?
Yeah. Or even just the music that you provide.
There's no time limit. It's sort of whatever comes, how it comes. So if there's more to come, I just do it. I surrender it. Surrender is a big part of what I do. I try and surrender everything. There is a record album though that I made of, I think it's about an hour. And it has rain in the background to Dulce meditation. It's called Dulce Meditation. And it's just instrumental music for an hour that a lot of people have used to listen to.
So a lot of your clients will create, after learning the dulcimer, their own meditation music?
Yeah, you do that by the third lesson.
Oh, that's interesting. So is that part of the coaching?
Yeah, if you want it. You see, there is no right or wrong with a dulcimer meditation. It's just as long as the instrument's in tune, then you just play as simply as you possibly can, as simply as you can. You know, many, many, many years ago, I was at a dulcimer festival. I was a teacher and a performer, and there were a lot of dulcimer stars and people playing all over the place. there were probably about 200-300 people. And I was walking past the cafeteria, and I heard this really simple little dulcimer sound, and I peeked around the bush, and there was a girl sitting there playing the simplest thing I'd ever heard on the dulcimer. And I said, "That's incredibly beautiful." And she had just bought it, still had the price tag on the instrument. She bought it at the dulcimer shop, and she'd never played it. So that's what dulcimer meditation is.
And you getting lost in it. Yeah.
So I tell a lot of my students, stop thinking, stop judging, just play.
Are dulcimers very expensive?
No, the dulcimer that I sell is about $1,100.
Okay.
Which isn't expensive because it's something that lasts a lifetime.
Yeah. And they're just so beautiful. You talk about something called stinking thinking and an attitude of gratitude. And I like that. And I'm sure you've used this in your own healing journey. That's part of the mindfulness.
Yes. Stinking thinking is being negative. So you have to stop your mind from being negative. So one of the things I teach is that when you replace what doesn't work in your life with what does work, you don't go back to what doesn't work.
Hmm.
So I have an online course, kevinroth.teachable.com, and I tell a story in, there are 8 modules, in about the happy hamburger, about the lady who goes to a well-known drive-through, gets a stomachache, tells a friend about the stomachache, and she said, "Oh, you ought to go to the happy hamburger. They sell, you know, all these veggie burgers and, you know, tofu burgers and regular burgers, and they sell fries. And when you sip the shakes, you know, the straw says namaste, you know, and all this stuff. But the hamburgers are $15. And she goes, "Oh my God, I would never spend that on a hamburger." Yeah. But she goes once, and she's so in love with the experience and it feels so good, she never goes back to that other place.
Yeah.
So that's what it is. When you drop the negativity and you replace it with positiveness or productivity, you change your life. Clients come to me and they say, "Yeah, but you know, change is really hard." And I say, No. What you're doing is really hard. It's harder because you're in a place you don't like.
Right. The fact is there a lot of them are addicted to it. It becomes an addiction.
Yes, yes. An addiction is not being happy with where you are and feeling stuck.
And they feel safe in the addiction.
Yeah, right.
So it does. That's probably the hardest thing I would think for people to do. First have the realization that they are in that place and then stopping the demon thoughts that come.
Yeah. So I'm just finishing up a chapter in my book about that. And it's about what causes people to change and why.
Right.
For some people, you have to hit bottom.
Mm-hmm.
And for other people, you just have a realization. It doesn't always have to be a negative thing. I saw the dulcimer and it changed my life. And nothing ever bad came of it. Other times, you have to go through what you have to go through. But when you learn the things that I teach, which works for me and has worked for my clients, you have tools that you use so that you become aware, wait a minute, I'm in stinking thinking land, let me get out.
Right.
And then you use certain things and then you leave because they're really just bubbles.
Right.
A friend of mine calls them mind farts.
Yeah. It's a good description.
They're just bubbles.
Yeah, I know. Do you have a gratitude journal that you use?
I've never kept a gratitude journal. I can just look into my dog's eyes and I'm there.
Me too.
Yeah. I had a new client. She says, "I just don't feel loved." I said, "Take your dog, get your dog on your lap, look in your dog's eyes." And she said, "Oh my God, it was great." No, I'm curious. You know, if you lived inside my head, you would never need to take a drug. It's just a bizarre place to be because there really is no there. I mean, I'm very grounded, but I'm very, very aware, or I think I am anyway, that, you know, when I go hiking today through these beautiful woods, I can see the way the sunlight goes through the trees and hits the rock. is a wonder to me. You know, I mean, I'm not like, wow, man, look at, you know, I'm not like that. It's just like, wow, this is really beautiful. Maybe it's also because I'm an artist, I'm a painter, that I see things like this. But I know that what's going on is not what my mind is telling me.
So that it's kind of interesting to me that you would have developed cancer. It really, because were you not like this prior?
No, I had it, but I was all about fame and fortune.
Okay.
You know, I thought that would fix me, and it didn't. I thought love would fix me. That didn't. Right. So cancer was a spiritual wake-up call. Because when you get a death sentence, it's like, what does any of that matter?
Right. So now what do you define as happiness and success?
Well, success is doing what you love and loving what you do. Because if you're really into it, then you can be successful at it. So I have a client who makes a lot of money and isn't happy. So I finally, after several sessions, had a breakthrough. And I said, look at the reason you're making the money, because there's a tiny part of you that likes to help people, just a tiny part. I know you were raised being about money and money and money, and, but there's a little bit of what you do that helps people. And he said, yeah. And I said, okay, now let's widen that. And his face changed. So happiness comes from being authentic and understanding what your purpose is. I don't like even that terminology because it's overused. Is being content, but being curious.
I so agree with that. And I think happiness per se is episodic. I think what you're talking about perhaps is inner joy, something that's sustainable. And happiness, I think, is a word that's thrown around too. Everyone's searching for happiness.
Yeah, I show them how to get there, that they're already there, but they don't know.
Right, right. So what's a daily non-negotiable for you?
What's a non-negotiable? Being unhappy. Being stressed. That's it.
Okay.
I mean, you know, there are things I have to work on. I have a terrible sweet tooth, which really isn't good for cancer. But, you know, I work on it slowly. One of the things that this journey teaches you is that you don't have to fix everything this moment.
Right. Where can my listeners find you?
So you can go to www.kevinroth.org, ROTH.org. And there is my website. I do a 30-minute free consultation to see if you want to work with me as a coach. It's not free. I've had a lot of people call me and ask me, you know, well, you know, I don't have any money. What can I do? In that case, when you fill out the form, if you take the time to fill out the form, I can direct you to free things that will help you or guide you, or at least tell you how you can have all the money you want.
Right.
But that's where you find me. And you can get dulcimers and dulcimer meditation, and also book me to come talk. I'm starting to do workshop and retreats and things like that. My book will be out, I think, hopefully this fall.
Fabulous.
And you'll find it on my website too.
What's the name of the book?
Right. It's tentatively called The Longing.
Okay.
But my editor will decide a more commercial name. I tend to go for the esoteric things that nobody buys. You know, when you come up with something like How to Cure Cancer in 3 Easy Steps, that'll sell a million.
You're not kidding. Maybe you should go with that, just so that you read the important content.
Yeah, you know? If I knew that that would work, I'd put it out there. But the right title will come. You know, it's just like the YouTube video that went viral is something called my OBE experience. So if you go to YouTube and look for Kevin Roth.
Okay.
And then if you subscribe, I put out videos quite often which teach or talk about what I know so far.
Okay, wonderful. I was going to ask you about the YouTube. Well, this has been very interesting, and I love the dulcimer music. And I really want to thank you for your time this morning. It's been enlightening, honestly.
Oh, thank you.
It's a different take, and I like that.
It's an original take. You know, when I first got into coaching, First of all, I don't like the word coach because it assumes that the coach knows everything, and we do not.
Right.
So I call it a creative life design, and no one knew what that was. So it's basically a guidance. But the way they told me that I should be a coach never didn't work because I had to be completely authentic and find my own way to do it. They said, oh, you know, with what you have and your story and your talents, you could be a rock star coach. Nothing else would be farther from what I would want to have 20 clients a day. It'd be brain damage, you know?
Yeah.
So I work with only, you know, one or two handfuls of clients because I think about the clients all week long.
Yeah.
It's not just, okay, all right, let me see. Okay, I've got her and him next. Okay. I mean, it's like, I don't care how much money you pay me or you don't pay me. If at the end of our time together, you haven't been fundamentally changed, I will not accept that. If you do the work, I'll continue it until you get it.
Right.
It's impossible for you not to get it because the intuition that we spoke about, that's why I do it through Zoom. Because often what people are saying is not what their face is saying. Well, I have a way of, like the out-of-body experience, I have a way of kind of looking into people and saying, well, this is what I'm hearing or this is what I'm sensing. You know, the other day I was looking at a client. She's lovely. All my clients are lovely. You know, they're like family to me. And just something came to me. And I said, do you realize the major breakthrough you just had? You know, and I'm not the kind of a coach that goes, oh, you're doing so great. I'm so proud of you. I'm not like that. You know, I'm like, I should be probably more like that. But something in her face said, in what came through to me is that you need to have her recognize how much she's grown. And I did. And I saw a smile on her face I'd never seen before. So it's like an art, really, that it's like creating music to me. So that's the fun part of it.
Thank you again. This has been a real treat for me.
No, thanks for having me.
I really appreciate it. And the music was beautiful.
Thanks so much for listening. If you enjoyed this episode, please subscribe, give us a 5-star review, and share it with your friends. And join us next time for Lunch with a Healer. Share your thoughts with us. Your comments, questions, and suggestions are all welcome. Go to speakpipe.com/lunchwithahealer and record your message. Try it out today.